Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
Brian developed Briefly and brought its high standards of posting an intelligent discussion of current events, laced with humor, lots of humor, and empathy. Brian's central concept was less is more, more or less, and he invariably offered much, much more. Today, let me introduce the Brieflies. Guiding us from behind the board at the Voice of Vachon is Gene Bosch Broadcast Studio in bustling and bodacious downtown Vachon. And keeping us on course is former airline pilot, treetop landing aficionado, flight instructor, newly elected Vachon Airport Commissioner.
Woohoo!
With 14 write-in votes against him.
The calls are going out now.
Yeah, I think a couple of them might be sitting in this room.
What's the informant fee for that?
Yeah. West Texas devotee and former military intelligence specialist.
That was hard to say. Good morning, Bruce. And hey, this is pretty darned exciting for me in the studio here. We got a house full of people. Holy cow.
Holy smokes. What happened?
I don't know.
A cataclysmic event.
I'm delighted.
We're looking forward to going to lunch at... Where are we going to lunch?
Yeah, let's see. Let's make sure we get the right places.
Follow each other.
That's right. Yeah, that's the way we normally do it.
Yeah.
That's right.
Sitting next to Truman, it's his wingmate, fellow treetop affectionate, arbitrator, mediator, two-time Fulbright scholar, high-end women's shoe salesperson. We need to hear that full story at some point. Tow truck repo man. There's got to be some stories there as well. Pinkerton guardian of the Boeing's first 747. Former tort law professor and Washington State Assistant Attorney General Craig Bellis. How are you, Craig?
Forgot the date I was born.
Yeah. And how many pounds?
1907.
I'm just Jim Dandy on this beautiful, glorious, sunny morning. Thank you. Good to be here.
And usually zooming in, but today in the studio with the rest of the Brieflies, is the voice of Indivisible Vachon and the Vachon Climate Action Group, our indefatigable defender of democracy who strives to create a livable planet overseen by a government we can all appreciate or at least tolerate, Kevin Jones. Kevin is also the skipper of Opus and a Camino Troll, 31, is that correct?
Yes, yeah, and length overall.
Yeah, he's an intrepid cruiser to points north of Puget Sound to the Johnstone Straits. Mm-hmm. Welcome, Kevin.
We just crossed the Johnstone Straits by ferry on our little driving tour of Vancouver Island, where we also jaunted over to Quadra, which is just across from Port Campbell. Campbell River. So that was a lot of fun. Yeah. So I'm usually at home ensconced in, laying around trying to figure out what my schedule is. I found myself wandering around town today, and fortunately, somebody pointed me to the studio, so I'm here. So it worked out great.
Good job.
Yeah.
And of course, the question is, do you wear pants when you're on Zoom?
I was going to say the most challenging part of the whole day is finding pants. Other than that, I'm good, I think, for the most part. I'm good today, at least.
Good.
Thank
you. We all thank you. Right?
The fates have prevailed. Yeah.
And I'm historian Bruce Holman. I work with the Vachon Heritage Museum and constantly working on histories of Vachon Island, finding out that there's multiple stories and multiple sort of ways of being on the island. So just fascinating to be here today, as usual.
Quick question about that. You're redoing the permanent display, are you not?
We're redoing the whole museum, yeah.
Everything.
Exactly.
Everything.
Yeah.
And in the process, are you deaccessioning?
Not really, because...
You know, what you do is you have storage in back, like most museums. So unless it's something that we have duplicates of, we don't deaccession.
He's so familiar with that term. He did not blink.
Kevin and I are looking at each other like, what?
That's when museums depart with certain part of their collection permanently.
Sure.
Okay.
Kind of like the federal government did a few years ago under Reagan.
Yeah, exactly. Right. All those air traffic controllers, who needs them, right?
And properties,
So let's take a moment and check in with each of the Brieflys about what special things you've experienced this past week. Let's start with Craig.
Yeah, thanks. I mean, aside from working on this kitchen remodel we're doing, painting everything and knocking everything down and tearing it apart and putting it back together, the highlight of my week was doing a video with Truman O'Brien at the airport. We did a lip sync video. It was Truman's brainchild. He sent me a message saying, "Can you meet me at the airport at 10 o'clock?" This was a couple hours before that, and I thought, well, it's always nice to know why Truman wants me to meet him at the airport at a particular time. And I said, why?
Is this something you've learned over time?
Oh, absolutely, over time. It doesn't take too many, occurrences, but I got the message that a video was going to be made there, which didn't help me a lot. I thought, who's doing the video? Right. And he writes back, he goes, we are. And I go, well, thank goodness you told me. I was going to come over my paint spattered clothes. But we threw together this video to the tune of Treetop Flyers by Stephen Stills and had a ball doing it with the help of Rob Mosley, who was our iPhone cinematographer.
And he did a fabulous job.
He did a tremendous job. We were going to do part of it with a drone, but we ran out of juice.
Well, actually, you know what? We got some video, but it was kind of washed out.
The iPhone just takes a tremendous. Yeah, you make a whole feature length.
Yeah.
3-hour movie was one of those.
Well, there's an ad right now on TV, I think, for people doing that.
Right.
But we had a ball. We spent all of like 45 minutes, I think, actually totally. Making the video, and you might be able to tell that.
Oh, no, of course, that professionalism.
Especially the lip sync part, because we did our lip sync live on the spot to one version of Stephen Stills' song, but it wouldn't transfer over, so we had to add another one, and of course, our mouths don't match.
The timing don't match. No. It's not much of a sync. There's a lot of lip in there, but not much sync.
A limp unsync.
Right. We had a couple of sight gags, which I won't...
That was your brainchild, and that was brilliant.
I get fault for that?
Oh, yeah, that was brilliant.
Why is this important?
And the reason that we did that is because this Thursday, we're having a live lip sync contest, as it were, at the O Space, and it's sponsored by Voice of Vashon. It's a little fundraiser we're doing. If you go on to voiceofvashon.org and click on the lip sync icon there, it will take you to a page that allows you to see, I think there are now four lip sync videos. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you what, Jonathan Kuzma's, in my mind, is over the top. His was great.
Well, they're all great. I didn't know we had such excellent roller skaters. But I have to say, Kate Dowling.
Oh, she knocked it out of the park.
She put this thing together. Her and a couple other people, I think. But she's the only person
she's
in the video, which is just really super.
I was going to mention Kate because I was in Cafe Vino Olio the other day, and there were Kate and a couple other folks like Jeff Hoyt and Susan McCabe. And I mentioned that to Kate, and she said, her neck was sore a week later.
Yeah, I was going to say, the way she was throwing her head around, I thought.
So you better check it out.
Check it out online, and you should come by Thursday night. Space on the 16th at 7 p.m.
Yeah, should be really fun.
All right, Truman, beside doing 4 hours of work for a 30-second commercial. What's your week been like?
Well, that was mostly it. I did have to do some editing to put the rest of it together.
We didn't use any of the seven deadly words, did we?
No. I don't think not out loud.
No, okay.
It's not the words we're worried about.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I have to. I'll give away part of it. I did edit in some video that we had taken earlier of our. In fact, the airplane that you see in the video, from the airplane, is the one that we put in the trees.
Kaput.
It is kaput. Mm. Yeah. So you'll see a white cowl on that one. And that's the one that we put in the trees. So
okay, wow.
Yeah, but anyway, that's about all I've done. It's doing that. It was pretty fun though.
Being a movie star for a week, right?
Well, and producer and editor and yeah.
Kevin, how about you? What's your week been like?
Oh, well, there's a couple of things. One is that now that we're back from being away for a couple of weeks, you know, we have to reintroduce ourselves to the wildlife that comes up to our deck and tempt them back because they have to go forage, you know, further afield. So the Douglas squirrel made a repeat appearance just a couple of days ago, which is always a highlight. But the other thing is I'm learning about a toilet planned obsolescence, I think. We talk about appliances and all this, keeping the home up to date. So, you know, we replaced three of our toilets, like, I don't know, 5 years ago. Hmm. And all three of the internal devices started to fail, like, literally within a week of each other. So I had planned ahead. I purchased one, like, internal flow regulator thing, you know, and blah, blah, blah. And so, you know, one of those three is now working. And thank goodness the other parts are now in the post office awaiting me to go pick them up. So we can get back to full flush mode.
Full flush mode. I like it. Does that take us straight?
Is this appropriate
for
today's show? Yeah. I think it might be.
Yeah, it okay, is. Well, we'll see. We'll see how much of a theme we can work into it on that.
Oh, thanks, Kevin. My week was interesting because last Thursday, the Heritage Museum sponsored a talk by Chris Bryden, who is a Tlutseed language speaker and teacher for the Puyallup tribe. Mm-hmm. And he gave just a magnificent talk about Tlutseed, which is the language of the Puyallup tribe and was also the language of the Shwabapsh people of Vashon Island. And it was fascinating to listen to him talk about, one, his teaching and how much the tribe and the young people in the tribe are engaged in learning the language. Because, mm-hmm. you know, by the 1960s, 70s, both Lushootseed, which is northern Coast Salish, and Tlutseed, which is southern Coast Salish, were almost dead languages. Mm. There were very few people left that were fluent in them, in an effort led by Vi Hilbert, an Upper Skagit woman, sort of revived it. She ended up teaching at UW, developing sort of the dictionary and the lexicon for Lushootseed. And so it was just fascinating. The other thing about his talk was that he actually, he's been doing a lot of research, as well as the cultural affairs area of the Puyallup tribe. And they've actually uncovered what were the original Tlutseed Shwabapsh terms for Vashon Island Quartermaster Harbor. Oh. So he's working right now to confirm that. We'll get that back. And hopefully within a week or so, we'll be able to at least hear my pronunciation of those terms.
So please, we're not going to rename the island, I hope.
Probably not.
I do have a question, though, about it's something that I've thought about. I think I talked about being interested in linguistics and that once before. But, you know, studying the Romance languages in the Germanic, they have a form and, the vowels and, nouns and verbs and adjectives. And they all, you know, are similar. Mm-hmm. Maybe the order of things will get switched around.
Right.
But what about some of these native languages? Do they have the same sort of structure, or they
Yeah, they largely do. I mean, there's a grammar, mm-hmm. you know, there's a structure. Mm-hmm. the difficulty for many of us in speaking Coast Salish is the use of glottal stops,
right.
and sort of whoosh kind of terms. Mm-hmm. And so it's very difficult for a Western ear, you know, until you get trained in it. But there's a number of people. There's been language classes on Vashon over the last 5 or 6 years. Mm-hmm. A number of people are starting to learn it, but one of the things I found so fascinating, and your question about the new museum, when we open the new museum, one of the interactives we're going to have is on native language. And Chris talked about the onomatopoeia of native languages, how they grew out of natural sounds.
Mm-hmm.
And so like the Tlutsid word for crow is caw-caw. I get that. And
sure.
And for Puget Sound, for salt water, is whoosh, which
really?
Is kind of like if you're sitting on a beach, you hear the waves sort of whoosh, whoosh, and up. And so it's all, much of the language, not all of the language, but much of the language finds its root in natural sounds. And so we're developing an interactive where you can sort of hear the sounds and relate them to where they come from.
What's the word for spouse?
is it what? Don't go there.
What did you say?
What the heck?
This is a show of four old white men talking about spouses. So we got to be very careful. We got to be very careful here.
Gender neutral spouse.
That's a good question. I will ask Chris next time I talk to him.
I do have to say that I may have heard this actually from Dale Crows, who may still be the president of the Northwest Archaeological Society and spent a lot of time with the Macaw tribe and at the dig at Ozette and so on. Mm-hmm. And he mentioned that the name of the town, Pisht, is derived apparently from the sound of water falling from the boughs of trees after a rain comes through.
Oh, interesting.
Yes.
Yeah, sure. Yep.
Well, that reminds me, the at least the legend is that the town Twisp comes from the sound of the yellow jackets, which are prolific over in the Meadow in the summer. Twisp is the sound that the bees, well, the yellow jackets.
Right.
Yeah.
How we're surrounded and didn't maybe even know it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's interesting, too. One of the things we're working on is an overlay map that starts with the place names, the Coast Salish, you know, Shuabapsh place names on Vashon Island, which are all named after a sort of natural feature, you know, the place of the madrone trees or the place of dripping water, or, you know, I mean, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then the European voyagers come in, you know, Vancouver and Wilkes, and they name everything after people,
sure.
Often people who never were here.
Mm-hmm.
And then the settlers, you know, European American settlers come in and also name things after people, Jensen's Point, you know. And then there's colloquial definitions, like actually the name for KVI Beach is Point Higher. That's
right.
The official sort of Wilkes name for it. Vancouver never named the points around Vashon. So Wilkes coming in trying to sort of give Americans, you know, a claim to this territory, named everything that Vancouver had not named. So he named it Point Higher after Henry Higher, one of the quartermasters. And then there's a Coast Salish Shwabapsh name for it, which means hidden spring. And there's a story about a girl who was promised in marriage to an older man, and she didn't want to get married, so she ran away and hid in Ellisport. And women would bring her water from this hidden spring where Ellisport is. And then also Ellisport is one of those sort of settler names. And so you get this overlapping kind of sense of place. And so we're going to try and capture that in the museum.
So in a sense, I'm wondering, this naming KVI Beach sounds very similar to the indigenous naming of places based on the features that are there.
It is. And that's a lot of places, you know, like Docton is named after the dry dock, you know, so after what was taking place there versus Point Higher. And another one I love is Dilworth. Dilworth is not an official name. That point's name, official name, is Point Beals. You know, Beals was one of the quartermasters.
Yeah.
But Dilworth was one of the first settlers there. And he was an itinerant preacher. He had a boat built called the Hylas, which means the word. And he would sail around Puget Sound, sort of like a circuit rider on the water, and preach all around South Puget Sound. Mm-hmm. And so we call it Dilworth Point, but that's not the official name.
Mm. I'll be darned. It's because he lived there, I guess.
Yep,
yeah.
Right. Yep, yep.
I've learned more in the last 5 minutes than I
no
have
kidding.
For quite a while. Should we quit while we're ahead?
Where's the big red switch?
Yeah, it's been nice talking to you folks.
I think we should probably have a whole show devoted to you, Bruce.
That is fascinating. That is fascinating. Mm-hmm. And I am really looking forward to seeing that overlay. That's got to be really interesting.
It'll be the new museum is going to be pretty spectacular. And as we get closer to it, we'll bring in some of the folks doing it. It'd be great to have them on the show. And
yeah.
Sort of talk us through what's
going to
be. Yeah,
I think that's a great idea.
Right. Yeah.
I agree.
Wow.
Totally.
So let's move on to talking about today as a significant day, as is every day. Today is November 14th. It's National Seatbelt Day. So when you jump into your car, be sure to put your seatbelts on. Mm-hmm. I remember as a kid, and many of you guys may too, seeing these anti-seatbelt ads in the magazines, mm-hmm. you know, sort of like cars going over the cliff and the guy jumping out. And if he had a seatbelt on, he'd never get out kind of thing.
Well, I have a true story of that. I did go over a cliff, and if I had a seatbelt on, I would not be here today.
Oh,
honestly, honestly.
But you also landed in the woods, and if you hadn't
had
a seatbelt
on, probably wouldn't be here today.
Real two sides to every
story. That's right.
You know, I have a few cars that I really cherish, and I've always, I rarely wear a seatbelt because I want the cars to be thrown free.
Yeah. yeah. Right.
No, I always wear a seatbelt.
Yeah. No, but the. Wait a minute. I got to get my train of thought here. You got me completely discombobulated.
That's my job.
All right. Go ahead. Talk amongst yourself.
It's not when he's flying the airplane.
No.
Well, I was going to say there's always a kernel of truth maybe in those advertising.
Exactly
jumping out of the car, right. You know, flying out the window.
However,
save yourself.
Today is also National Pickle Day. So eat your pickles today. Mm-hmm. And it's National Spicy Guacamole Day.
Oh.
Which is appropriate since we're going to go to Casa Bonita for lunch.
We could be having some spicy
correct?
Guacamole.
Good.
Oh, that's good to know.
So it's also the day in 1851 when Herman Melville published Moby Dick.
Oh.
Not a very successful novel when it was first published, but has become one of the American classics. And appropriate for Voice of Vashon, in 1922, the British broadcast system began their radio service.
Mm. Wow.
So Voice of Vashon has a legacy back to 1922 and the BBC.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yeah.
Right. Well, you know, in the past, I've jumped in here with some predictions of future history being made. And I have to come clean here today because there's a couple of my predictions that aren't panning out. You know, one of them was that eventually people would abandon, the financiers would abandon True Social. But so far, True Social manages to survive despite losing, I think the latest report was something over $70 million since
73.
Its inception. 73 was million. That it? Yeah, I think we saw that headline. Yeah. So, okay, so that prediction. And the other one, it was that by today, I was predicting that half of the co-defendants in the Georgia State trial to overturn the election results would have flipped by now. So we needed 9, but we only have 4. Unless something's happened like in the last 4 hours or so that I didn't keep track of. But yeah,
I think
so,
you're probably going to be pretty close time-wise.
Yeah. So anyway, I'm behind. They got to pick up the pace here is all I can say. But anyway, so we'll continue to look for hopeful future historic
is that,
events.
Are those predictions or is that wishful thinking?
You know, you got a good point there, Greg. So we shall see how history treats this whole affair if we survived to that point.
Well, and speaking of history, we're at a historic moment right now. Whether or not the government will be funded for the next however long.
Right, we've got 72 hours or less,
exactly.
Something like that?
Yeah, the countdown is on. What I find fascinating, too, is that the proposals right now do not include any funding for the Ukraine war or for funding Israel. Thoughts on that?
Well, my thought is that I'm going to put my neck out and say that they will, in fact, fund at least partially, which I think is the proposal. But and I am very disappointed that that there isn't a certain amount of funding for at least one of those conflicts. The fact that they've been backing off of Ukraine bothers me quite a bit. But the Congress or the House, the People's House, is pretty dysfunctional. So my prediction could be totally, 180 degrees off. You saw the thing about the Tennessee congressman who got elbowed by McCarthy in the hallway because he didn't vote for McCarthy's, and they started screaming at each other. We have a saying in our house that there's no life after high school. And once again, it's been proven there really is no life after high school. Boys acting like boys.
Yeah.
Jeez. Yeah. So, I suspect that it's a truce right now on that issue. So, in other words, let's keep the government running, and then the gloves come off when it comes to, which country we support with our support for hopefully reasonable cooperation between countries, internationally. Right. It's, of course, disturbing to many that we have these conflicts that are now so visible to us. Of course, the reality is there's conflicts all the time that are not as visible. So this is, I think, the reality, really, for a lot of the globe that we're just now seeing on our TV screens more regularly. How to achieve peaceful coexistence, of course. not an easy recipe to get there. But I agree, Craig, with I think where you were going is that, aggression across borders, which we've seen when Russia's invasion, not only taking Crimea years ago, but also the most recent now, what, year and a half, going on 2 years,
right.
Invasion of Ukraine, is clearly something that that I hope we can get beyond us but, as a civilization, but time will tell.
Yeah. Let's open the Pandora's box. Yes.
Just one other thing I wanted to add. The great irony about this budget, agreement that they're working on, is that the Republican House is working with the Democrats and doing exactly what got McCarthy thrown out of the speakership.
Heaven forbid.
Yeah.
I mean, we should have cooperation.
The irony there. I don't know. Drives me a little nuts.
Boggles the mind.
It does. It does. It does. Yes, the old concept of compromise not being a bad word comes to mind. It's sort of like democracy's built on compromise, right? And we'll see how that works.
Well, to that point, it was always frustrating to me to watch like the Talking Heads Sunday shows and stuff where some issue is brought up, right? And the moderator is talking to somebody who's in the House or the Senate, and the person being interviewed says, well, I'm not a part of the problem because I introduced some piece of legislation that's going to do X, Y, Z and fix the whole thing. And it's like missing from that conversation is that you and another half of your House or Senate have to agree with you.
Exactly.
And just throwing stuff on the fire is not necessarily a cause for being patted on the back.
Not to mention what was missing and what was added to those proposals that you're not talking about.
Exactly. There is that.
Now, it'll be an interesting process to watch whatever comes out of the House when it gets to the Senate and gets into the committees that sort of puts the two proposals together.
So speaking of both parties, what's the deal with all the Republicans bailing out? We have a number of representatives, I think, and senators who are quitting. Just saying, that's it. I'm done.
Like Mitt Romney, for example, stepped down and...
Did Mitt Romney step down?
Mitt Romney's not going to run again.
Oh,
right.
Oh.
I mean, nor is Governor Inslee, but he's a Democrat. But
no, but there's a number of the Republicans, and they're saying it's because the Republican Party is in such shambles that they don't want to be a part of it anymore.
It's intriguing to me that we see people come forward to talk about that dysfunction only after they've left.
Exactly.
Right? And it's where's the bravery? And, of course, I guess we see the consequences of, Cheney and what happened to Liz Cheney when she stood up while she was part of the club, right, and talked about her views.
Yeah.
So maybe that's the what we're seeing.
Fear of it, yeah.
Yeah, but it's also, I mean, you know, it's, as an historian, I mean, that's the very nature of a two-party system at work, is one party will get more and more extreme in whichever way, left or right, and gradually they'll get out of sync with the voters, and ultimately they'll be pushed out of power, and the other power party will come in, and there'll be more of a balance for a while, and then it may swing the other way. It's the old pendulum idea, and it never works quite as smoothly as a pendulum works, but it is that concept that very seldom in American politics have third parties been successful. Because what happens is a third party begins to emerge and develop its power, that one of the major parties will sort of subsume it and bring it in under their tent. And, you know, it's the old idea, you know, I'd rather have you in the tent looking out rather than outside the tent looking in. Yeah. There's another word that goes along with that, but not permissible, probably. Exactly. It's probably one of the seven words.
Seven words.
Well, but it's a process.
And the other thing is that as that third party gains in power, it erodes the power of both other parties, and it affects the balance there.
Sure.
So.
Yeah, and a number of particularly presidential elections where third party candidates have sort of upset. You know, and sort of allowed a minority party to come into power. Mm-hmm. And that's happened, you know, multiple times in American history. And so we'll see what happens. But that's part of my sense is what's happening is the Republican Party right now is growing more extreme to the right. And that's why moderates are starting to bail out. And as moderates bail out, you know, new moderates are going to step up who will win those elections. Either as third-party candidates or as centrists or whatever. And it's going to take a while. I mean, because we only hold elections every 2 years for the House, every 6 years for the Senate, every 4 years for the president. Nothing moves quickly. And I think that's part of the design of the framers of the Constitution.
So you think the right has gotten more extreme recently?
Not the right only, but the right has gotten more extreme recently
and more vocally extreme. But I mean, according to our ex-president, the left has become more vermin-like.
Well, that's a term that has a long, long history, all know, Greg.
Yes.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, and you know, that sort of vilification of your opposition is always a big part. Yeah, Truman.
Oh no, I was just pointing out that I looked up vermin, just to get us a definition here. I think it's pretty appropriate, in particular where it talks about people, they're perceived as, what is it? Oh, despicable, and as causing problems at the rest of society, and the vermin who ransacked our house, for example.
Close to deplorable?
Very, actually.
I can see our listeners now scrolling to their online synonym finder to check out other options for vermin. You know, you speak about the pendulum. First of all, there's a good friend of mine who's a doctor of psychology, taught at a university as well, and he says, yeah, don't get too overworked because the pendulum will eventually swing back. Now, I think we've all got our fingers crossed, right, at this point that it will, or that it's on the way back with the current administration. But the other thing is, Indivisible Vashon, we do this every 2 years. We look at where the really competitive races are across the country. And we will shortly have that information up on our Indivisible Vashon website. It's not there today, so don't bother looking right now. But what we're doing is looking at where the really competitive races are and which of those are held currently by what we would call a progressive candidate, aka somebody who aligns with our values and typically Democrat. There aren't a lot. You know, most of those seats now that are really competitive are held by Republicans who have very conservative values and don't really align with us and tend to vote against things like common sense gun policy and issues that would help the climate, et cetera. I could go on, as you know. you know, the pendulum has swung. And so what we'll be doing is waiting for those primaries to occur in those states. California, New York, for example, both have five super close races the last time around. But we need to see the primary behind us so we can understand, you know, who will be competing for those seats and which candidate we'd like folks to consider supporting.
I don't mean to be cynical.
However, I'd
call it maybe more realistic. That whole discussion that you just engaged in, which I find right on, works only if we have a democracy and we have elections and we don't have individuals who decide that they're going to stay in office regardless of what the vote was.
Mm-hmm. That's so true, very true. There are certain assumptions that go into this.
Yes.
And I'm fairly certain that in 2024 we will have elections given our current administration. Of course, there's always the concern about what might happen depending on who wins in November.
So, Bruce, as a historian, have you seen this before where we've had these election deniers? I mean, for all these variety of elections? Is that historically something?
Yeah, no, it's interesting. Not so much election deniers as sort of election disbelievers. You know, and it's interesting. When you go back to those really critical elections, you know, when Andrew Jackson is elected, I mean, you know, the traditional party that had been in power since Washington, you know, just was gone bonkos saying, how could this happen? You know, and it you know, the votes must have been stolen and, you know, elections on the frontier. Because Jackson was the first president who was not either from Massachusetts or Virginia. Mm-hmm. And he was the first president who was born in the Trans-Appalachian West. And so for the East Coast, you know, traditional parties, it was bonkos over the top. You know, this couldn't happen. You know, and Lincoln, of course, with Lincoln's election, you know, not only election deniers, but they just went, they went to war over
right.
it.
Right.
So, yeah, so there has been that in the past, but never in the quite in the sense of what we see today, where it's just sort of like, no, this person won. I mean, it was sort of recognition in both of those cases that this person won. What can we do to make sure that doesn't happen again?
Right.
And, you know, and in the Civil War, it was, we're going to succeed.
Right.
We're just going to form our own country where this won't happen.
Right.
And we may be getting close to that. I mean, you look at the coastal states versus, you know, versus the center and the south, south-southwest. You know, there's serious divides in America right now, you know, as serious as we've ever had. So how that will resolve itself. And like Craig pointed out, I mean, there's some assumptions that go into democracy.
Yeah.
And if those assumptions are lost, or if not all the participants hold those assumptions, you know, autocracy is not far away, right. Never has been.
Mm-hmm. So I will point out I am part of the Washington Indivisible Network, which is a statewide group of indivisible group leaders, and we did meet just last night. And so people were reporting in based on the election that just occurred. And the good people of Ocean Shores were sort of bittersweet. They said that on our, I can't remember which race exactly, was school board or something, or maybe council. But, you know, they lost a couple to the real extreme conservative, otherwise known as MAGA Republicans. So, but I also noticed when I was in Squim, as we went through Port Angeles on the way up to our Vancouver Island trip, going through Squim and seeing signs for the upcoming election for the former QAnon mayor who had gotten basically displaced in the last election. And so I saw that and I called my friend Karen Hogan, who's been on Voice of Ashon with us, like, Karen, what's going on? He doesn't get it, right? And she's like, don't freak out because we don't think he's going to win. Sure enough, he didn't. He actually lost by a pretty fair margin. So, but it is the pendulum, you know, that swings back and forth. And in those cases, in those local elections, getting active and involved can make a big difference. In Ocean Shores, they didn't make the difference they wanted, but that doesn't mean they're not going to keep raising their voices, you know, to get the governance. Well, like in my intro, right? At least we can tolerate.
Yeah, that's fascinating. Just, you know, looking at the national returns from this previous election, this last election, how many of those extreme candidates did not win, you know, for school boards and library boards and county councils and city councils and things. And it's that's sort of, it's back to that model of any party that wanders too far from the center. does so at its own peril. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're starting to see. But back to Craig's point, you got to have consensus that democracy works.
Right. And you have to have, you've got to be in agreement that that elections are being conducted appropriately and legally, and actually have that. It looks like with all the research and litigation after the last one, that was proven beyond a reasonable doubt. So, yeah.
Yes.
So that's where we get to the point that there are no election deniers. There are election liars.
Yes. You know, speaking also, there's an opportunity. I have a public service announcement here. This is an opportunity for me to jump in. Speaking of local voices raised to achieve certain outcomes. So the Vashon Mori Community Council is meeting this Thursday at 7 o'clock in the Land Trust building or on Zoom. You can find them at v-mcc.org, their website. And one of the topics, and they've been doing a great job of advertising this, is we're going to introduce a couple of motions regarding groups on Vashon Mori who are focusing on changing things for the better for the environment and the climate. Then those motions will be read into the meeting on Thursday by yours truly. And then in December, third Thursday, 7 p.m., we'll be voting on those. So just put it on your calendar. Some of those issues, solar panels, mm-hmm. you know, community
yeah,
solar,
yeah.
that's on the list. So we've talked about that a number of times. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, if you want to just tune in and see what's on the minds of a number of environment climate organizations here on the island and what they're asking our state legislature to do to help move their agenda forward, tune in at 7 on Zoom or at the Land Trust.
Great. So let me raise sort of the Pandora's box that we're all sort of staring at right now is the war in Gaza, you know, Hamas-Israeli war. What should the U.S. position be?
You know, for me, that's really a tough one. I think it's despicable what the Hamas people did. I mean, the fighters coming in but the same time, it's kind of like the four boys, the one who's a bad kid and he gets everybody else in trouble. So they all get smacked, you know, for the one kid. It's kind of the same situation there that Israel's come in and said, these guys are bad, so we're going to whack all of you. And I really have problems with that. I've had problems with that concept within small groups, and I have the same problem here. I just don't get it, you know.
Craig, what do you see as the legalities of this?
Well, there is customary international law, and there are laws with regards to conflicts. Obviously, targeting non-combatants is generally considered illegal under almost any code, national code or international customary law. It's tough, though, in this situation. There are certain things that are totally verboten and not supposed to do. But I agree with Truman 100%, and I can't imagine that most people wouldn't. I just found it interesting when the Hamas went in and attacked across the border from Gaza into Israel, and they engaged in these atrocities. There was an understandable knee-jerk reaction on the part of many people, obviously the families of those individuals who had hostages taken. You'd understand anything that they would say because they're out of their mind and worry and grief. But for just bystanders like us on Vashon, to a certain degree, the reaction that we should bomb them back to the Stone Age and turn Palestine into glass, are all Palestinians back, into asphalt and glass, talk about disproportionate. I mean, people sometimes either forget or never looked it up. There are 2 million people that live in Gaza, and most of those people are not members of Hamas. There are a lot of those people that support Hamas, but there are a lot of people that are totally apolitical, if you will, and are trapped in this area there in Israel. The issue, of course, is a bigger issue, and it's one that's been going on since the late 40s, of how does the Israeli, and the Palestinians live in close proximity, and how do you do it without engendering tremendous resentment, which is what has happened with some of the leaders of Israel and the citizens of Gaza. So it is a horrible, horrible situation. I mean, Hamas needs to be taken to task, to say the least. But with their headquarters in tunnels under schools and hospitals, that is no easy task.
Well, you know what they did in New York with the rats. Speaking of vermin, they injected, I think it's carbon monoxide into their rat tunnels, and they've taken some whole communities in New York and have eliminated the rats.
Well, I understand that, but the word is, the intel is that that's where the hostages are.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. So Kevin. One thing, if our listeners haven't had a chance to read Suzanne Greenberg's piece in the Beachcomber a couple of weeks ago now, I think. Suzanne, if you don't know, is the leader, president, I think might be the right title, of the Vashon Havara. And I think that her words are sort of an appropriate display of empathy for the humanity that is really at heart here in a lot of people's minds as well. And it's this difficult problem, right, of, you know, you want to hold the aggressor to task to try to minimize the likelihood of reoccurrence and not build up so much hatred in the process that you guarantee that the process will repeat itself.
Yeah.
But I did have one thing, Truman, I'm curious for
ahead.
You.
Go ahead.
I had a question for you.
All right.
So, and maybe others, of course, can jump in too, but, the videos now about the reporters who've been in the tunnels of apparently under the hospitals to mm-hmm. see a motorcycle apparently with a bullet hole in it that would have been a bullet hole when it was on the Israeli side of the border and it got shot. Now it's in a tunnel under a hospital, and weapons caches, and then clothing that apparently was worn by a hostage at some point. And it's proof, right, that the Hamas is indeed under the hospital and it's right. appropriate to bomb. Okay, so... there was a reporter there, no kidding, who walked around and looked at all this stuff. They weren't there, you know, for the last 2 weeks to see what may have been happening in those tunnels, to have that stuff put there and who put it there and blah, 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 right? So the thing I'm leading up to is not to suggest anything nefarious, but we know that we have in our world today disinformation, right? And deep fakes and AI will eventually contribute to that problem. So that's in our world today, but we've always had the fog of war. Mm-hmm. And so I'm curious about, you know, when we talked about fog of war in the past, did it include disinformation at that time? We've always had psyops, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I'm kind of curious how you see this. Is this new step forward,
no,
or is this that's the same
no,
thing,
it's
just
the same
new technology?
Story. Same okay. old story. Okay. I mean, it's like in Vietnam, them dropping leaflets. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. we did it to encourage the citizenry to not support, you know. But that kind of stuff is gone. I mean, Bruce can tell us about World War II, where they they psyched out the Germans with where the invasion was going to occur.
Yeah. You know?
I mean, so that kind of stuff happens all the time. And mm-hmm. this is nothing new.
Is it just more enhanced now that we have, you know, digital videos that can be faked
disinformation,
or is it just now?
Yeah, I think that because of the internet and because of the social media that we have, mm-hmm. I mean, like the spring uprisings, you know, that occurred a few years ago in the Arab countries, that happened because the information was available so much so. And I think the same thing's happening here.
So, yeah, that can make things happen really quickly,
yes,
right? Because it can spread so much. Yeah, okay.
So quickly, yeah. But I think there's no different than what's been done in the mm-hmm. past.
The thing that, one of the things that bothers me the most about this war in the West Bank is, I mean, obviously, like all modern wars, it involves horrible, horrible heartache and pain and death. But it is also a war of public opinion. As many wars are, but today with social media and mm-hmm. the different ways of communicating with people, it becomes such an integral part of the battle. I don't know. I'm not. The Israelis and the Palestinians have been at this now for so long, and Ireland, I guess, has somehow tamped down the issue to a certain degree, but that dispute over there in the Middle East and in Israel just doesn't seem to want to go away.
Well, you know, the one thing to think about is that all wars, all conflicts are economic. All of them are. That was true in Northern Ireland. You know, primarily it's economic. They say, oh, it's religion, but it's not. It's economic. And the same is going to apply there. So I think the way that you get around that is somehow making the economics work for everybody. And I think that's the only solution. There's going to be hatred and, you know, all of these from all the various groups, but the economic reality
that is one hell of a task.
Oh, no, there's no question.
Because I don't mean to change the subject, but
no.
but we'd have a lot less immigration problems if the countries that people are trying to get out of had a better economic situation.
Absolutely.
And of course, less corruption, et cetera, et cetera.
Sure. So that probably answers the question I was going to ask, is that economics isn't just necessarily trade war type economics, it's the ability of a population to be sustainable and to be able to flourish to some extent so people are willing to stay in the system.
Exactly.
It's kind of, yeah.
And if you look at Gaza and Israel, I mean, the way they are set up right now, I mean, Israel is, you know, really doing well, and the folks over in Gaza are having a heck of a time of it. So, you're going to have that issue.
And that's the other thing about this that really upsets me is the anti-Semitism. I mean, you can disagree with Israel. You can, and hopefully you can disagree with Israel and not get into trouble.
Yeah.
But you can disagree with them and at the same time be supportive of Israel. Mm-hmm. It's not an all or nothing. I mean, you know, I'm an American and I consider myself patriotic. But I'll tell you, there have been administrations that I just despised. But I have a right to disagree. Mm-hmm. So now we've got this rise in anti-Semitism. I don't know, frankly, if it really has that much to do with the conflict. I think it's an excuse on the part of individuals who are anti-Semitic to begin with to go out and do the horrendous things that they're doing in the United States.
You know, it kind of raises an interesting point in my mind, too, is that, you know, there's a lot of rallies happening, you know, support Palestinians, support Israel, support, and so I could see myself going to both of those rallies to support both of the people in both of those countries.
Right.
But it's not clear to me that observers who see somebody going to a rally in support of, say, the Palestinian people, are they also saying that they're against the Israeli people? And I think that's a point that people need to be aware of, that it doesn't mean that you support one group, that you're necessarily against another. You can support both, but you don't necessarily support the actions taken by a group who claims to be governing of those people. So, hopefully we'll find a way through to where we can recognize the ability to support the populations, and we don't support the non-humanitarian activities that are taking place.
That's way, way too rational, Kevin.
Yeah, isn't it, though?
Yeah. I mean, it's sort of, and it gets back to what we've been talking about here, it's sort of that rise of the authoritarian only one way, sort of looking at the world. And, I mean, that's what's happening with American politics right now.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's happening with this war in Gaza right now. It's happening with the war in Ukraine. It's all or nothing kind of thinking. And it's difficult to get people away from that. Craig, you've done that your whole life as an attorney, right?
I was going to say, good point.
Well, it helps understand the psychology. the cognitive process, cognitive psychology says that people want things to be simpler. They want to be able to pigeonhole, especially in the overload of information that we have available to us today, and especially in places like the Middle East, that where people don't understand what's going on there, never quite understood who's fighting who and why they're fighting one another and that sort of thing. Give me a simple answer. Give me a side to take. Then I can deal with it and I can go on the rest of my life. But to get into the nuances of it is something that a lot of people don't have the time or energy to engage in, which is why you can convince people to jump on the bandwagon of a particular position so easily with some fancy
propaganda
selling.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Let's bring that concept home here on Vashon Island. Is it absolutist thinking about the ferry system going on in Vashon right now?
We need an enemy where it unites us all.
Well, I think we got that, you know.
Gosh. They continue to exceed expectations in that regard, don't they?
Yeah. Well, I think that the Chamber and Amy Dreyer, who's been on our show a couple times, they're working hard. They're trying to keep the pressure up, and I encourage them to do so. I encourage everybody to stay informed on that subject. If you want better ferry service, it's not going to do a lot of good to sit back and complain about it.
Yeah.
You don't really have a right to complain about it unless you do something about it. So, you know, talk to the chamber, engage with the community council, and organize so that there are multiple individuals who are taking the same path and complaining to the legislators and whatnot.
I have to say that it's some years ago now that Washington State Ferries came out and say, we're going to have to cut like a whole bunch of runs off the triangle. You know, we're going to have to really, really ramp that down. And at the time, so I followed that call to action, right? And I remember meetings where C.C. Stone and Greg Beardsley and Kara Ulatowski and Todd Pearson, I think, if I remember the name right, all got together, and what do we do to make something happen here? And so we did flyers, and we were posting flyers. We were handing out flyers in the ferry line, wearing the vest, and got approval from WSF to do this stuff and this and that. And the best part of that whole thing was seeing a WSF employee taking one of our flyers and posting it on the bulletin board at the Fauntleroy Terminal. And so, but the point that I want to make is that I've done what you just said. And it is gratifying. You look back at what accomplishment came out of that. In this case, they didn't cancel any of the runs. It might have just been a head fake all along. But in this case, we really have a service problem, which is threatening to a lot of our interests on the island. But I've been there, and I endorse anybody who even is thinking about it to don't quit thinking and just jump in, because you can make a difference.
Well, thank you, Kevin.
That brings up to a good point, and that is that we've been talking about the Israeli and Hamas conflict and all of these things. What can we as individuals do? I mean, how can we have an effect on something that's that far away and that ingrained? Is there anything that we can do that would help either direction? Everybody answer at once.
Yeah, I don't know if any of us have an answer, but
vote for people who subscribe to the philosophies that you believe in.
Yeah, and I think Craig, you had some really good words that it's just too easy in our world of information overload to say, oh, here's the side that I want to pick. In this case, I don't think we're picking sides, mm-mm, right?
No, I agree.
And so I think that just living. To spread that message that it's about humanitarianism, it's about working and living together on this planet, which is the only one we have, and I think the only one we're ever going to have, is really something that is important to all of us in the long run.
So we're down to our last minute here. So let me sort of post a question for us to think about, maybe quick one two-word sort of responses before we move on. We have the Troll King now on Vashon Island, Oscar the Bird King. We've got orca whales coming in the Quartermaster Harbor in spectacular sort of fashion. Is Vashon on the cusp of becoming the Leavenworth of Puget Sound?
cultural tourism is a good thing and a bad thing.
Yeah.
And it just needs to be examined, and people need to think about what they want and what they don't want. So, there's pros and cons to everything.
Mm-hmm. Just literally yesterday had this same conversation with a couple of dear friends who I fortunately met just within the last 4 or 5 years. Mm-hmm. We all live here for a lot of different reasons, but some of that reason is the Keep Vashon Weird theme, and that the crazy things happen here and we love it. Stupid bike night, we could all go on. We need to find a way that can continue to happen.
Great. Yeah. Well, with that, we're near the end of our show, Truman. Is that correct? So for Kevin, Keith, Craig, Truman, myself, Bruce Holman, we will see you next week.
And do we have a guest for next week?
We do. Craig?
We have the Journeyman coming in next week. Yep. One of my favorite organizations on the island, doing great work, and have done a lot of great work just in the last several months. We'll hear about all the new things they've done.
Okay, see you all next week.
Look forward to that. Have a great week.